We are officially 2 weeks away from opening day. And as we get closer and closer, I know you all have Orioles questions. So today, we open up the mailbag once again, coming up on this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast.
You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Orioles fans. Today is Thursday, March 16th, 2023, and welcome back into the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb. And coming up on today's episode, we're going to open up the mailbag here. Got 9 questions, all from you, the listeners, coming up on today's episode. We're going to talk about Gunnar Henderson's outlook for 2023. We're going to talk about Taron Vavra possibly playing a different position this year. We're going to talk about how Jordan Westberg can move up some prospect ranks. We're going to talk about some potential trades, some more prospect stuff, and more. It's all coming up on this mailbag episode of the pod. But before we get there, just did want to thank you for making Locked On Orioles your first podcast listen of the day. We're free and available on all podcast listening platforms. Make sure to leave us a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts if you can. And make sure to like, comment, and subscribe to the Locked On Orioles YouTube page. The pod is on YouTube right here as well. Leave your comments, leave your thoughts on any of these questions I will answer today. And make sure to tell your friends. Listen, again, we got 2 weeks until opening day. If people are excited about what should be a very exciting 2023 Orioles season and they're looking for some daily Orioles content, the only daily Orioles MLB podcast out there, tell them to check out Locked On Orioles wherever you get your pods and on YouTube. And again, thank you for making Locked On Orioles your first listen of the day. For your first listen today, let's jump into the mailbag here on a Thursday just before the week ends. And I've got 9 questions here, all from you, the listeners. Thank you so much for sending in your questions. Again, if you sent in one and I didn't get to it, make sure you stick around because you should hear me answer that question on a future mailbag episode. We'll continue to do them throughout the offseason and as the season starts 2 weeks from today. But let's kick it off with a question from James K. on Twitter, who asks, quite simply, will Gunnar Henderson win AL Rookie of the Year award? And quite simply, James, I think yes. Yes, he will. Now, Henderson is by far right now the odds-on betting favorite. And over at FanDuel, Henderson is plus 240 to win the American League Rookie of the Year award in 2023. That is by far the best odds. He almost has triple the odds that the number two position player has, and that is Masataka Yoshida, the outfielder for the Red Sox, who they signed from Japan this offseason. He's at plus 650. And then you got the young shortstop, Anthony Volpe, for the Yankees at plus 800. I don't even think he's going to have enough time in the big leagues to win the award. Then at number four, you've got Grayson Rodriguez at plus 900. Tristan Casas, the Red Sox first baseman, also at plus 900. And then Hunter Brown rounds it out at plus 1,000. Again, those odds provided by FanDuel Sportsbook. So Gunnar Henderson is by far the betting favorite. I think in terms of talent, Henderson is by far the favorite. I mean, you just look at all these guys. Volpe, I don't think, will play enough. Grayrod, I would love to see him win it, but I don't know if he'll pitch enough. I mean, he could definitely finish in the top three. I don't know if he'll pitch enough. Hunter Brown, maybe, but there's so many other good Astros pitchers. I mean, Hunter Brown right now is the Astros' number five starter to start the season, and that's only because Lance McCullers is injured again. If Lance McCullers would have stayed healthy in spring training, Brown would have been like the number six starter slash the swingman fireman in the bullpen. That's not really a role that can win you an award like this. Now, if he stays in the rotation all year, he's certainly got a shot. Tristan Casas could win it if he lights the world on fire in Boston. That's maybe one guy I'd be worried about. And Yoshida is obviously the oldest of these guys, has played the most professional baseball, one of the best hitters in the MPV over in Japan for years before getting signed by the Red Sox. So he would be definitely a contender. But Henderson has the highest ceiling by far out of any of these players. He's going to play every single day in the Orioles lineup. He's got great power, got great speed, plays great defense, just a great hitter. Yeah, I think he's going to win the award, and means he's going to get an extra draft pick next year as well. But our second question of the day comes from Andy R. on Twitter, and it has to do with Gunnar Henderson as well. Andy asks, should we be worried about Gunnar Henderson's struggles at the plate so far in spring training? This is a question I've gotten a couple of times, and my quick answer is no, because spring training is A, such a small sample size that it's basically like a week, maybe 2 weeks max of the regular season. That's the sample size, like a week and a half. So it's basically a mini slump, more so than something that should tell you a guy's going to be really good or really bad throughout the season. It's also really hard, even in a spring training game, at the beginning of a game when you've got your regular starters in there, it's really hard to replicate a regular season environment in a spring training game. And I mean, research has shown that spring training performance doesn't really show much for regular season performance for most major league players. Now, Henderson is only 2-for-21 so far this spring, with just 3 walks, a couple of singles, and 9 strikeouts. The hitting hasn't gone well for him. But again, he's got great talent. He's still young. Small sample size. He's going to go through some rough patches this year. I mean, it's his first full season in the big leagues. Guys are going to figure him out at times, and he's going to have a couple, probably 2-for-21 stretches at the plate. But he's not going to hit under 100 throughout the season. He's going to be fine. I'm not worried. Third question of the day comes from Joe R. on Twitter, who says, do you see Blaine Knight getting to the big leagues at all this year, or I'm going to add even at all, with the Orioles? Now, Blaine Knight was a guy who I really liked when the Orioles drafted him. Third round pick for the Orioles back in 2018. Had a really live arm out of Arkansas, helping that team get into the College World Series. He's now 26, and he pitched the full season at AAA Norfolk last year. That was his first full season in AAA. And he still hasn't been in the organization for, I mean, that long. He's still a couple years away from, you know, running out on his initial minor league contract. But the stats were not good. And despite him being in AAA for the whole year, he threw 72 innings, and Knight had a 7.38 ERA in AAA last year. Just 8.8 strikeouts per nine and almost 5 walks per nine. Those are not good numbers at all. He started a few games, was really more of a bullpen swing guy and sometimes a mop-up guy for the Tides last year. Now he's you know, in minor league camp, and the O's have brought him to some major league games. They're going to keep him on the Tides roster in 2023, and he's just going to be pitching depth. But the issue for Knight is, he's not major league depth right now in terms of guys like, you know, say Spencer Watkins and Bruce Zimmerman and, you know, Joey Crable and, you know, maybe Mike Bauman and, you know, Cole Uvula and those guys. When they get sent to potentially AAA, you know, Logan Gillespie is another one of those guys. I would call those guys major league depth because although they're in AAA, they could easily be brought up to the big leagues quickly if an injury happens. Blaine Knight, despite also being in Norfolk, is more so AAA depth in the fact that, yeah, he's on the Tides roster, but he's not going to be one of their 5 or 6 starters, and he's not going to be a high-leverage reliever. He's going to be somewhere in the middle, and maybe if a starter got injured, he could maybe step into the AAA rotation, but I don't see him with any path to the big leagues this year, and if things don't get better, I mean, he's got a live arm with a live fastball, but the stuff hasn't looked as good, and the command has gotten worse, really. If he doesn't make a huge stride this year, I probably would see the Orioles releasing him by the end of 2023. And unfortunately, although I really liked Knight when they drafted him, I just do not see him getting to the big leagues, at least with the Orioles. I hope he does. I hope he can make it. I don't see it happening. We got 6 more questions to get to here on a mailbag episode. Coming up next, we will talk about Terrett Favre potentially playing a different position this year, talk about the most important players that the O's should hope do not get injured this season, and a little bit of talk about, you know, what kind of player is Jordan Westberg? What kind of player could he be when he finally gets to the big leagues? But first, this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. We are approaching the end of the NBA season. We're almost into the NBA playoffs, and now is the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook, because new customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's bonus bets back if your first bet doesn't win. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It's safe, it's secure, and it's super easy to use. Then you can bet on everything, from the money line to point scores and threes drained. And for me, I'm still looking at Nikola Jokic MVP odds because he's still the favorite, but his odds are getting a little worse, which means it might be the time to strike as the Nuggets are in a little bit of a rut. And plus, FanDuel even lets you combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with a same-game parlay. So don't miss the chance to get your no-sweat first bet, up to $1,000 in bonus bets, when you go to FanDuel.com/LockedOn. That's FanDuel.com/LockedOn to learn more. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. So we're back here on a Mailbag Thursday episode of the podcast, answering 9 Orioles questions, all from you, the listeners. If you would like to submit a mailbag question For a future mailbag episode, you can email us at lockedonorioles@gmail.com. You can tweet the pod at lockedonorioles. Make sure to follow us over there. You can also DM the podcast account. The DMs are open. You can drop a mailbag question right here in the YouTube comments on any of our videos. And you can leave a mailbag question in the review section on iTunes. So once you leave, hopefully that 5-star rating and it asks for a review, leave the mailbag question there and it will be answered on a future mailbag episode. But let's get to our fourth question of the day. It comes from Brian via Twitter. And Brian asks, could Terran Vavra end up being the starting left fielder for the Orioles at any point this season? This is kind of an interesting question and it has some merit depending on how much you believe in Terran Vavra. I mean, I think most of us agree that Vavra will not be an everyday player, at least to start the season this year for the O's. And he's mainly a second baseman who can play shortstop and third and first, I guess, if you need it. And we've seen him play the corner outfields, and he played a little bit of center field in the minor leagues. I mean, he's very versatile. Now, he's not elite defensively at any position, and there are some worries about him defensively at second, which is kind of his main position at this point. You could argue he's maybe just as good at a lot of the other positions, but he's versatile. He brings a different approach to the plate, the way he hits. And so if he gets hot and that different approach is helping the Orioles lineup and he's playing more and more and it's working, I could see him maybe not being the everyday in there all the time left fielder, because I think he'll sit against some lefties and you'll get Austin Hayes and Ryan McKenna in there. But if Hayes is struggling, like we saw in the second half, and McKenna doesn't take that next step to be, you know, an everyday player, and if Kyle Stowers, really it's going to be about Kyle Stowers. If Stowers doesn't make that leap, because he's going to be given all the chances in the world if the left field spot is open to win it before Terran Vavra does. But if Stowers doesn't take advantage, I could see it being Vavra. He's not gold glove level out there, but he holds his own defensively in left field, which I think most people agree is probably the easiest position to play on a major league diamond at this point. Now, not at Camden Yards, which is interesting because of the new wall, but they could put him in right field, put the better outfielder in left field. And then you can always put Ryan McKenna out there at the end of games as a defensive replacement to make sure you secure the wins. So if the bat's there and Hayes and Stowers are struggling, it could happen. I don't see it being likely, but it could happen if Vavra is really providing what he can at the plate. Next question comes from Fiddleback Productions on Twitter, who actually asked me 10 mailbag questions for today, so thank you for that. I'm only going to get to one of your questions today, but might get to some more on some future mailbag episodes. Want to spread the love here and let everybody else ask some questions as well, but I appreciate all the mailbag questions. And it's our fifth question of the day. It says, who should the Orioles wrap in bubble wrap? Because they absolutely cannot afford to lose him to injury this season. I think the answer is pretty easy in that it's Adley Rutschman, right? I mean, he's the best player on the field. He's going to be an MVP candidate. Finished second in Rookie of the Year voting last year. He leads the pitching staff. He's an amazing defensive catcher. He's great offensively as a switch hitter, hitting the middle of your lineup. He's just an all-around stud. And as we know, last year, the Orioles were 16-24 before Adley got called up. And then they went 67-55 after he got promoted. That was an 89-win pace that the Orioles played on for most of the season after Adley got called up. And it's not crazy to say, and I've said it, that if the O's had Adley Rutschman from opening day on, I think they would have made the postseason last year. That's how much of a difference he makes. So you just cannot lose that guy to injury, especially when you look at how important the catching position is, especially how important it is with, you know, a fairly young, inexperienced still pitching staff, despite, you know, adding Kyle Gibson and Cole Irvin and Michael Givens. It's still a young and experienced staff as a whole that Rutschman is working with. And if you lose Adley Rutschman, you do have James McCann back there, which is much better than having Robinson Chirinos and much better than having, you know, like an Anthony Bemboom be your next option. And I would feel somewhat secure with McCann back there, but you don't want him back there every day, especially with how bad he's been offensively for the Mets the last couple seasons. And then you end up with Anthony Bemboom or Mark Colesberry as your backup catcher behind McCann. It just changes the team. It's 100% Adley. They need to keep him healthy all year. And they're going to by giving him more off days, DHing him, playing a little first base, not catching day games after night games. It's going to happen because he's so important. You have to keep him healthy this year and for years to come. Next question comes from John F. on Twitter, who asks, how good really is Jordan Westberg? And I think this is a simple but actually really good question, because when you think about all the Orioles prospects, especially the ones that are getting pretty close to the big leagues at this point, there's just a tool that stands out for a lot of these guys. Like, you run through it. You know, for Colton Cowser, it was always the plate discipline, the ability to spray to all fields. He's changed a little bit, got more swing and miss. But, you know, for Connor Norby, it's just the hit tool. He hits and he hits and he hits. For Joey Ortiz, it's the unbelievably elite defense. For Kobe Mayo, the crazy strong arm and the crazy power from the right side. Jackson Holliday is just like the all-around stud whose plate discipline is just out of this world. And he's just so beyond his years being 19. You continue to run through these guys. DL Hall, it's just the amazing stuff. Grayson Rodriguez, it's the fastball changeup combination. When you say Jordan Westberg, I feel like he's the hardest to come up with that one or two tools that really makes him click. Now, is he good? Yeah. He won Orioles Minor League Player of the Year last year. In AAA, you know, he had over an 800 OPS. He hit 273, 508 slugging, 18 homers, 25 doubles in 91 games in Norfolk. He was really good for the Tides. Now, he's been optioned back to minor league camp. He's going to start the year in the lineup every day in Norfolk and try to push his way to the big leagues at some point in 2023. But you almost feel like he's just, the way I describe Jordan Westberg is, I think he's just going to be a good major league player. He's going to be a good, solid guy who can play second, third, and short for you. Could hit 15 to 20 homers, could have 25 to 30 doubles, going to hit 260, 270, probably get the OPS up there over 800, be a really solid player. Maybe not an all-star player, but maybe a tick below that where he's a really solid contributor and definitely can be an everyday player for a good Major League Baseball team. It's just that instead of having those one or two standout tools, it feels like Westberg is more so just a really well-rounded baseball player, and you need some of those as well. Maybe he doesn't jump off the page like some of the other prospects do, but I feel like he's just so solid that I almost think he's like the most secure of being at least a good big leaguer out of all these guys. Like, I feel like his floor might be the highest. And that's how I'd explain Jordan Westberg. He's just like, I'm so sure he's going to be a good big leaguer. I cannot commit to him even being an all-star even once, but I'm so sure he's going to be an above average big leaguer. And you need guys like that in the system. That's what he is, I think, at least at this point. We got three more questions, though, to get to here on this mailbag episode. Talk a bit about the pitch clock coming up. Talk a bit about Orioles prospects and, you know, Rookie of the Year in 2024. And then a little bit about a potential Orioles trade coming up as well. But first, this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast is also brought to you by Ultimate Baseball GM. I am loving this app. This app is awesome. And this new partner and sponsor of today's episode, the mobile game Ultimate Baseball GM, I am loving it. If you have ever dreamed of becoming an MLB GM and managing your professional baseball franchise, well, your dream can come true. This is the game for you. You log on to the app. It's super easy to use. You create your team, get your players. You're basically doing every strategic aspect of your team. You play through the season, try to win a championship, you hire the staff. You manage finances, you scout players, you draft players. You're even managing like personalities. You're managing clubhouse stuff. And you're going through free agency and the draft and the trade deadline and everything in the season, you are managing it from your phone. And it's realistic, it's challenging, and it's fun. It is fun. You got to download the app because it gives you that sense of being a baseball manager. It's not like fantasy baseball. It's a little more involved and I think even more fun than that. And once you download the app, you don't even need Wi-Fi to play, so you can play it anywhere. And Locked On Orioles listeners get a 100% free boost to their franchise when using the promo Locked On in the game store. So make sure to check it out. To download the game, just visit probaseballgm.com, scan the code, or look it up on the app stores. That's probaseballgm.com. Ultimate Baseball GM. Start your dynasty today. So we're back here to finish things up on a Mailbag Thursday episode of the podcast. We thank you for making Locked On Orioles your first podcast listen of the day. But for your second listen, check out Locked On Fantasy Baseball. You can win your league by listening to Matt and Dom every day as they bring you the best fantasy draft strategies. Find Locked On Fantasy Baseball wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And I know Locked On Fantasy Baseball has been helping me out a bit. My Dynasty League, I just had to make my prospect draft pick on Wednesday night, had the sixth pick, ended up with Hunter Brown of the Astros joining my rotation. Got Grayson Rodriguez as my prospect pick last year, which would have been happier about if he got to the big leagues, but kept him on my team. And we roll into 2023 looking for a championship. But back to the mailbag here. David G on Twitter asking our next question of the day. He asks, how could the pitch clock impact pitcher management for the Orioles this season? And it's kind of tough to know how it's going to specifically impact the Orioles. But just in general, I think one thing that hasn't been talked about a lot, but it could impact, is that if guys are pitching really poorly, especially relievers, when they come into the game for the first time to start a new inning and things are just not going well. Let's say, for example, you know, we got a 5-2 Orioles lead heading into the top of the seventh inning, and in comes Brian Baker. You know, the starter, Dean Kramer, just went six. Here comes Brian Baker for the seventh, Orioles up 5-2. And there's nobody warming in the bullpen because Brandon Hyde said this is Baker's seventh, and then, you know, he's going to Givens in the eighth and plan to go to Bautista in the ninth. Well, Baker comes in and just doesn't have it. The command's not there. You know, he walks the first guy on five pitches. He gives up a double. And then, you know, a really hard hit, you know, sacrifice fly. And all of a sudden, three batters in, it's 5-3. You know, the tying run's at the plate. And Baker's command is not there. And they go out for a mound visit. But through all this time, you know, it takes a little while to realize that, okay, we need to get another pitcher up. So by batter three, when they can tell, okay, Baker does not have the stuff today, you know, C.N.L. Perez gets up and he starts warming in the Oriole bullpen. And he can get warm pretty fast out there. But with the clock always running and less time between pitches and you're throwing pitches quicker and quicker, it gives the bullpen less time to warm up. You can only make so many mound visits. You also can't throw over to first base as much. You can only pick off, you know, three times before a guy just gets second base. So you can't use that to your advantage to try and, you know, stall and give more time in the bullpen. So I think that's one way it could impact, is that if guys, you can tell, just don't have it in their first two or three batters in a close game, it's going to take more time to warm up, and you're not going to be able to get that new reliever in quickly. And it might lead to Brian Baker having to face, you know, one extra batter in that inning because of the pitch clock. A guy like C.N.L. Perez just couldn't get ready in time. I would watch for that. I think that could happen sometimes this year. Next question comes from David M. on Twitter, who asks, could the Orioles hold prospects back in AAA to keep them eligible for the AL Rookie of the Year award in 2024, and of course, potentially getting that draft pick if you have a guy start on the Major League roster on opening day and finish top two in Rookie of the Year voting? And this is interesting, because you could argue this is what the Orioles did with Gunnar Henderson last year. They held him in AAA just long enough so that no matter how much he played in September in Baltimore, he was still going to be rookie eligible in 2023, and that he is. And Henderson is now, as I talked about earlier, very much the odds-on favorite to win Rookie of the Year in the American League this season. And because he's going to be on the roster from opening day on, if he does win that award, the Orioles are going to get an extra draft pick in the 2024 MLB draft. And we know how good Mike Elias and his team are at drafting. We know how much they value draft picks as well. They're going to value that. And so looking at the prospects right now, I mean, I could see it happening with Jordan Westberg, Colton Cowser, Connor Norby, I think specifically because none of those guys are on the 40-man roster. I think it's less likely with Joey Ortiz, just because I don't think he has the ceiling of winning Rookie of the Year, and he is already on the 40-man. He's the only guy still on that 40-man. But I could see a case where, you know, Mullen's playing well, Santander's still around, and the combination of Hayes and Stowers is doing well enough in the outfield, and Colton Cowser's having a really good year in AAA, but not dominating so much that he has to come up immediately, and the Orioles just kind of wait until September to call Colton Cowser up. Or with Jordan Westberg, you know, they just kind of wait a little longer to call him up, because between Arias and Mateo and Henderson and Frazier, you know, they're all still there playing well enough in the infield for the Orioles that they wait just long enough, call them up in September, but they're still rookie eligible. I could see it happening because the O's seem to have the veterans like Frazier, like Hayes, Mullen, Santander. They have them in spots now that they can hold down the fort for most of the season. Now, will it be the right thing to do? We'll see when we get to that point in the year, August and September. But they have the veterans to hold down the fort in those spots to unfortunately allow some of those guys to stay in AAA longer to stay rookie eligible. I think it kind of happened with Gunnar last year, and again, I could see it happening again this year. And the final question comes from Phil M. on Twitter. Phil asked this question a while ago, but finally getting to it because I actually really liked this question and wanted to do a little research before answering it. But Phil said, which Orioles top 100 prospect could you see them trading for a top 100 pitching prospect from another team, and who could that be? So first of all, I could see this kind of happening with a Joey Ortiz or a Connor Norby type. It could even be a Jordan Westberg as well, but probably one of the infielders the Orioles have besides Jackson Holliday that is ranked generally on national top 100 prospect lists, because not all these guys are going to be able to play in the big leagues. We saw this process start when the O's traded Darryl Hernandez for Cole Irvin earlier this offseason. They just, even though they thought he was good, they knew they'd never have a spot for Darryl Hernandez in the major league roster. So I think a guy like Ortiz or Norby or Westberg could cash in a different top 100 prospect. Now, I tried to look, I looked at the Fangraphs list and I was looking for guys who are kind of in the bottom half of the top 100, are starting pitching prospects, or at least pitching prospects, and are on teams that already have a lot of pitchers either in the rotation or also in the system where they could afford to trade one of these guys to get a bat. So the first one I went to was Cleveland, and I went to Logan Allen. No, not that Logan Allen, the other left-handed Logan Allen, not the one the Orioles claimed off waivers from Cleveland this season, but the much better Logan Allen, who was a second-round pick in 2020. Doesn't throw super hard. He's like 89 to 92, but he just like throws strike after strike after strike, and he's got a crazy changeup. Kind of think John Means. He's a very John Means-like pitcher, Logan Allen is. I think that could work out if, you know, Cleveland wanted an infielder or maybe a Colton Cowser type. The next guy I went to was Gavin Stone from the Dodgers organization, another 2020 draft pick. He was picked in the fifth round. Now, Gavin Stone, a right-hander who throws a lot harder. He is mid to upper 90s. And Stone's a guy who, you know, came into the Dodgers system and came from Central Arkansas, and nobody knew a lot about him. And then the Dodgers just turned him into this amazing pitcher who also has a crazy good changeup. Think poor man's Grayson Rodriguez for Gavin Stone. And the Dodgers could probably use an infield bat as Gavin Lux got injured and they're playing a lot of young guys in the infield. They might want some insurance there. I could see that happening. And then the final guy I brought up was Jake Eater, as the Orioles and Marlins still have not made this trade. Eater, another 2020 draft guy, fourth round pick out of Vanderbilt, you know, a tall left-handed pitcher who throws hard from the left side, mid to upper 90s, and he's got a really good fastball, and he just has this insane slider. And Eater's an interesting guy because he's kind of a two-pitch pitcher. He's kind of fastball slider. I think he has a changeup that he throws from time to time, but he's basically a two-pitch guy. And, you know, reading about him from Eric Longenhagen at Fangraphs, he kind of compared him and made him a lefty Spencer Strider. You know, how Strider only throws basically two pitches. Eater could be that as well. And if the Marlins do want to get serious about getting some hitters, that could be another deal that could work. So thanks, Phil. That was a really good question. And thank you all for asking questions. Hope you got them answered. If not, tune in to a future mailbag here on the pod. But we've got one more episode coming up this week, back here tomorrow for a Friday pod. Talk a little Orioles news and notes as the O's had the day off in spring training on Wednesday, but back to it on Thursday. We'll talk more about the rotation changeup the Orioles made that we chatted a bit with Nathan Ruiz about on Tuesday's episode, what that means for the opening day starting rotation. And speaking of opening day, the Orioles apparently are going to name an opening day starter soon. So if they do, we'll talk about it coming up on tomorrow's episode. But until then, I'm Connor Newcomb, and this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.